None of this got them any closer to getting a ton of gold. They frantically test-drilled for the lost vein. On day 70, they found the vein again. It had been shifted by some past upheaval 231 feet to the north and only 30 feet from the surface. They wiped off their sweating faces, the droplets tending to freeze in the bitter winter winds of these altitudes, made a new level area for equipment and a new shaft, and began to drift again along the white quartz. The vein had thinned down to about 3 feet in width. They drove on, filling the dark air of the drift with white chips and blast fumes. Johnny went back to studying the battle reports. They must know cyclotactics very precisely. He was once again struck with the oddity of this attack on a tank in Denver, where no tank existed. He narrowed down the location on the faded satellite photos. They had kept coming off the machine even after the president was dead. Yes, there was smoke at that place. They had scouted out Denver thoroughly. Typically, Turl had not intended to work in the U.S. Mint to refine his gold. He had set up a place in the basement of the remains of a smelter, a few minutes' drive away. He was just using the U.S. Mint as a receipt point. But all the gold invoices they found in the mines said U.S. Mint, and it seemed to Johnny that where so much gold was funneled in, there might be further traces there, in case they missed at the load. Also, this tank that didn't exist to the U.S. military might have been guarding the mint. In a swift foray, he and Dunaldine swooped down to the U.S. Mint. They had made very sure there were no ground cars or planes as the afternoon faded. They landed in a park in the cover of giant trees and sped on silent feet to the mint. The place was still. It had been scouted before, but once more they went over it, just in case the cyclos had missed a vault. Inside, they found nothing. They lingered outside in the darkness. Dunaldine amused himself by prying into the mounds that had once been cars, wondering what they looked like in the days when they could run. Johnny was thinking about the views Turl had shown him. He went around to the back and played a mine lamp on the ground so it would reflect a dim light up. Shortly, he was looking at the largest mound. It came to him that this must be the tank the battle plane had destroyed. The non-existent tank. He lifted some turf. Blown sand and grass had overlaid it. He cut the turf very carefully so it could be laid back and leave no sign of disturbance. The thing wasn't an ordinary car. It was so thickly built that it had endured the rust of time. The metal was twisted where it had burned out. He had never seen anything like this. It had a slot one might fire out of, but that would be its closest resemblance to a tank. The window frames had bars over them, a bit like a cage. What was this thing? He pried a section of metal aside with a mine crowbar and got inside. The interior had been blackened by fire and floor plates had warped. He pried up a floor plate.